Opening weekend is another opening weekend sweep for the Atlanta Braves. The Braves sweep the D-backs in the opening series. It was a phenomenal performance by the hometown baseball team. Braves country, you have to be proud from what you saw. Comebacks, dominating pitching performances, the bullpen, it had it all. And we're here to talk about it on the Braves Report. From the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, this is the Braves Report presented by Kroger, the podcast that takes you inside the clubhouse and gives you the stories behind the score. I'm Barrett Salee, hanging out in the heart of Braves country, and it is a happy Braves country. After a 5-2 win on Sunday afternoon, the Braves improved to 6-2 after the sweep of the D-backs. It is the fourth home opening sweep in Truist Park history. Yes, that is right. Four sweeps in the opening series in the eight-year history of Truist Park. So good luck. The Braves fans showed out. Three sellouts, 3 for 3 in the sellout department. The fans were phenomenal all weekend long. And like we've seen time and time again from these Braves, they just never quit. You need a late home run to stretch a lead out going into the ninth inning. Well, Austin Riley provided that on Sunday. You need to come back from a 6-run deficit. Well, all of the bats have that. Jared Kelnick with the big one, with a little lob wedge out there in game one as well. It was everything you wanted to see from this Braves team. And I think there was some concern, obviously. But we're going to go over the good stuff first, because there was a lot of it. Save more at the pump during the busy travel season with Kroger. Save on fuel every time you shop when you use your Kroger Shopper's Card. Earn one fuel point for every dollar you spend. Redeem fuel points and any Kroger Fuel Center today. That comeback in game two on Saturday night will go down in history. It was only the fourth time that the Braves have come back after giving up 6 or more runs in the first inning. And to see this team never give up, to see this team just fight and scratch and claw and get this and find a way to get it done, it is the epitome of what the Braves have become. And that is a team that just that understands, hey, you know what? 6 in the first inning, no problem. Still got 27 outs. And in some cases, more than that, depending if you're on there on Friday night. But it's always somebody. It was Darnold on Friday. It was Ozuna with two bombs on Saturday. It was Austin Riley coming alive on Sunday with the glove and the bat. Because I'll be honest, sitting in that press box, that play he made going into foul territory, throwing across his body, I don't know if anybody on the planet could make that. And Austin Riley made it look easy. And then, of course, he extends the lead late with the big home run to essentially put the game away, to essentially ice the game away. And look, this is what they do. They never give up. And here are, I'm going to give you some cuts from players from this. Here's Austin Riley about the identity of this team and the fact that no matter where they are, no matter what the issue is, they're going to find a way to get it done.
You know, we just feed off each other, and I think we don't give up until the final out, and we rally together. Like I said, Chris did a great job today, and bullpen did great, and you know, we got some timely hits, and I took a good ball club over there and to get a sweep.
It wasn't all great news, sort of, though. We'll get to the starting pitchers in a minute. Obviously, Strider and Free did not have their best games, and we know why Strider didn't. But the silver lining now, Braves fans, is you saw that your bullpen is absolutely phenomenal. 14 and a third, 5 hits, only 5 walks, 7 strikeouts, no runs. That's just over the weekend series. 14 and a third, no runs. I don't know of any bullpen that is capable of doing that. And I think when you know that you are going to have to rely on them even more. So going into Saturday's game, we all kind of knew that and thought that Strider was going to be out, if not for the year, certainly a significant period of time. The bullpen came in, and well, first of all, Freed. getting through five. But the bullpen took over. They knew what they had to do. They got the job done. They just went from there. And Chris Sale talked a little bit about that on Sunday after his performance, about how, you know what, it's not necessarily just Raisel Iglesias, because Pierce Johnson got the save on Sunday. But yeah, you have two guys with saves so far, but you know what? There are probably really eight closers on this team. Chris Sale talked a little bit about that.
I mean, that's what happens when you got eight closers out there. I was talking about it when I came in with JoJo and Matsy. It's, you know, talking about Iggy coming in for the third day in a row, and it's like, you know, this early in the season and with, you know, with that many weapons down there, it's not really a necessity. You know, he is who he is, and he's in the ninth for a reason, obviously, but when you just have that many tools down there and that many weapons, and you almost just flip a coin and it doesn't really matter. You know, righties, lefties, you know, fifth inning, ninth inning, whatever. You can just kind of pick a name out of a hat and you're going to like what you get.
It wasn't just Sale who was appreciative of the work of the bullpen. Surprise, surprise, Brian Snitker glowing about that unit after the game on Sunday.
It's something else. I mean, they all, you know, it took all of them too, and they've all been throwing the ball extremely well. And yeah, it's a pretty impressive body of work what those guys did the last 3 days.
If you're going to have pitchers go down, if you're going to have pitchers struggle, like we saw in the first two games of the series, you better hope your three, your four, and your five are ready to go. Well, I mean, the number three seems just fine, because Chris Sale, 5 1/3, 4 hits, 2 runs, 6 strikeouts on Sunday. And this is on the heels of a fantastic performance in the cold up north in his first start. So you're getting exactly what you want to see from Chris Sale. And I think moving forward, the confidence that Snitker already has in him and other players already have in him is going to be big, because now you're talking about Chris Sale potentially being, most likely being, I should say, the number two starter on this team. And the way Max Fried has pitched, you might have to rely on Chris Sale against the ace of other teams. So he has suddenly, after a week and change of the season, become a big part of the Braves' plans and how potentially they need to succeed, and how what they need from their pitchers moving forward. Here is Chris Sale himself talking about his performance on Sunday.
Everything was felt like I had all three pitches working. Felt like I was kind of, you know, mostly commanding the zone. I don't think I had any walks today, so that's always nice. It's my first time pitching here ever, and then first time pitching here as a Brave, so it was special. You know, I felt the energy throughout the whole game, and, you know, to be able to pitch in front of the home crowd and you know, have some success and win a ball game, and then, you know, the ovation at the end was really special. I have my whole family's here, so you know, to be able to share that with them and my team was nice.
Sale's a veteran. Everybody knows him. Not many people can hit him. And Matt Olson was glowing about the work of Chris Sale following Sunday's win over the Diamondbacks.
It's been great. I mean, you know the name and the stuff, but you know, getting in the clubhouse and seeing the competitor that he really is cool. Just a pro all the way through. So it's been fun.
Two things we need to hit on before we take a break. And I think it needs to be discussed how big this series was for Jared Kelnick. To see what he was able to do, and I don't, this is a little inside baseball, a little behind the curtain, so to speak. Jared Kelnick had like the village, like a small, medium-sized village of fans here in attendance this weekend. You go outside that clubhouse on Friday, and there were more Kelnick jerseys than any other jersey. That's how many people that were here. And in fact, I have a friend who runs a restaurant close to the Battery, and he said that it was like one of those kings or queens dinner tables at a castle where they put like 10 together to fit all of them in their restaurant. And that's and that wasn't even an exaggeration. I mean, there were tons of people here And for Kelnick to do what he did, obviously the lob wedge double on opening night to get the job done, you know, on Saturday, just absolutely tearing it up. And then Sunday, you know, he had it, he went 1 for 3, sitting at 579. 579 for the season. That is way more than you would ever expect or need out of Travis Kelnick. And, you know, talking to him on Friday, I think the pressure has been taken off of him in a way that I don't think people can describe. I think there were two things at work for Jared Kelnick prior to arriving in Atlanta. The pressure of being basically the savior, or the guy who's supposed to be the savior for a franchise after being drafted so high, was not something he was ready for. And he didn't necessarily say this, but it felt like something that was, you know, was sort of out there, is that he wasn't necessarily being coached that well in Seattle. That when he got to the Braves, suddenly he had a hitting coach that actually could adjust his swing. And guess what? His swing was adjusted. And now, I don't know if he leads the league in hitting, but I mean, it's too early for that. Batting over 500 after a week and change, doing all right. So that is at play. And then batting ninth is something that I think nobody really wants to do, but Kelnick needs to do. And it is worked out beautifully, because having the ability to turn this lineup over, having the ability to, you know, get Arcia, who I, you know, Arcia hasn't hit a home run yet, but, you know, he's batting what, 500, 450, whatever it is, then get to Kelnick and constantly have runners on base for Ronnie and Ozzie and Matt. I mean, it is, if you're looking for an MVP of this team through the first week and a half of the season, it has to be Jared Kelnick. I don't think there's any way it can't be Jared Kelnick. He has done that much for this team. And did we expect this? I kind of was down on the Kelnick thing. I thought that, okay, maybe, excuse me, maybe he was just one of these guys who, you know, he was good, but not great. He could have a good solid 10-year career, but would never be a superstar. And I was wrong. Fully on board with me being wrong. I will absolutely admit my faults, and I was wrong. The other guy, though, is Marcell Ozuna. And we've seen at times this year that he pulls off those sliders outside, because if I was a pitcher, what would I do? I'd throw him a slider outside, low and outside, because he swings at those all the time. But and he has pulled off on some of those. However, I think especially on Saturday, we saw him go the other way, make a concerted effort to, you know, let that ball get deep and flip it out to right field. And that's when you know, A, Marcell is hot, and B, this lineup is unstoppable. And if we have that, it's this team, the line, there's no breaks. And I saw this stat, and this is going into Sunday's game. Since May 1st of last year, Marcell Ozuna, with a slash of 299, 364, 614 with a 978 OPS and his 42 home runs. Of course, this is heading into Sunday. Third most in the majors since May 1st. Let's see. I mean, that's not just MVP caliber numbers. That is like legendary numbers, considering where he came from, considering how bad his April was last year. So Marcell absolutely deserves a ton of credit. And, you know, he kind of got that rally on Saturday started. You know, he understands, I think, his role, and that is actually to get on base at times. You know, yeah, he's there to bomb. There's no doubt about it. But if you need a base runner, he's more than willing to flip his hands out there, go the other way, and get on base and keep the line moving. And to me, for a power hitter like that, to understand a role and what the greater good needs, that's rare. And it's I think a direct reflection of something that I talked to Kelnick about this weekend, that there's a different atmosphere with the Atlanta Braves. And we hear that all the time, the Braves way, but it's a real thing. It's a real thing. And I think Ozuna understanding that, hey, you know what? You don't need a bomb all the time. Sometimes you need to get a rally going. And the best thing to do is get a little CNI single. That's big. We'll take a break. It's not all good news, though, Braves country. We'll talk about some bad news and maybe some ways to fix what is becoming an epidemic in Major League Baseball. From the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, this is the Braves Report, presented by Kroger.
When you're looking for leading cardiac treatment, look to Northside Hospital Heart Institute. We lead with 5 emergency cardiac care centers, so we're here when you need us most. We lead with more than 55 locations in Georgia. That means we're always in the heart of your neighborhood. We lead with clarity, because clear direction is better when it comes to understanding every step of your treatment. Northside Hospital Heart Institute. We lead with heart.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Welcome back to the Braves Report, presented by Kroger from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. My name is Barrett Salee. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Hey, give us 5 stars. Leave us a review. I'm not begging, just asking. It'd be kind of nice of you to do that, because we like positive reinforcement. Doesn't everybody, right? So it wasn't all good news. Yes, it was the 4th opening series sweep in 8 seasons at Truist Park. Yes, one of those was the COVID year. So yes, it still counts, but it's the COVID year. But it wasn't all good news. In fact, there was a lot of bad news mixed in to what was otherwise a fantastic weekend at the park. And of course, that is Spencer Strider. The injury to Strider, it was... We're sitting in the press box, and I'm sitting there looking at Baseball Savant, and I'm noticing that Strider only touched 98 once. All the balls were in the dirt, and his spin rate was something like 1,000 RPMs. I don't know where it ended in terms of the entire outing, but the average was like 900 to 1,000 RPMs lower than what it usually is. And I'm sitting there, and I look over at Justin Toscano, our great beat reporter for the AJC, and I'm like, is something up? And we kind of sat there talking to each other like, okay, yeah, it's odd. He's had these before, these games where things just don't necessarily look right, but it's odd. And after that, he kept spiking balls over and over and over again. I'm like, what the heck is going on? And when Snit talked about Strider's injury in the press conference on Friday, he looked like he had already resigned himself to the fact that Strider is out for the year. Obviously, we find out that it is a UCL injury and is going to get a second opinion, which of course he should, but it's a big blow. And here is Austin Riley on the news that Spencer Strider could be out for a prolonged period of time.
Oh, devastating. You know, you never want to hear something like that. You know, like I said, from a guy that works so hard and is so, you know, honed in on his craft, and, you know, he cares so much. Yeah, you just kind of feel for him, and you know, just, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, it's unfortunate. You hate that it happens, but, you know, he's somebody that's you know, is going to put in the time and the effort to get back to where he was. So, you know, just like I said, feel for him more than anything.
Players are going to miss him, and of course, manager Brian Snitker is going to miss him too. Here is Brian Snitker on Saturday after finding out that, yes, indeed, it is an elbow injury, and yes, indeed, it could be one that knocks Strider out for the entire season.
Well, just kind of like everybody else, waiting to hear the results after he went in this morning, and wasn't good, and you hate that. Hate it for him. You know, feel really bad for him. I mean, he's a kid that does everything right and loves to compete and just the whole everything, you know. So, yeah, just wait and see what they decide to do.
All right, the Braves can overcome something like this. And, you know, it's never good to lose your ace, But when you've got an all-star in Max Fried, you've got a former all-star in Chris Sale, you've got a veteran all-star in Charlie Morton, and Ronaldo Lopez, who apparently turned into an ace in Chicago, you know, they're going to be fine. They're going to be fine as long as one of those all-stars actually pitches to his ability or even close to his ability. That's not something that Max Fried did on Saturday, at least in the first inning, giving up six runs. Now, to his credit, and something that the Braves desperately needed, getting through five innings was huge. That was, of all of the things that happened this past weekend, Max getting to five innings was probably the most important event. And you know, going into a series that's a four-game series, might have some rain, obviously, but you don't have a day off, at least scheduled. So you needed to have your bullpen rest and just getting four extra innings when it looked like Dylan Lee was about to go in was huge. But again, two starts, Fried has not looked good, especially early. And here is Austin Riley on the level of concern for a guy in Max Fried who, if Strider's not there, is being counted on to be your ace.
I'm not worried about Max whatsoever. He's a pro. He's probably harder on himself than anybody else. So I know he's itching to get back out there again. So, but that was good to see. You know, those, you know, after that first, to kind of get settled in and get things going.
All right, we're gonna go two different directions with this. One, I saw this pop up, and I even asked the question on X if the Braves should go get Trevor Bauer. And I didn't look at the final tally on the poll, but the winner was yes. And I know that's been discussed, and I am not on board with it. Because, look, we all know Bauer's situation, right? He wasn't convicted of anything. The lawsuits were dropped. I think we all saw the reasons why, and he said it in a video. And so I'm not necessarily sure that the PR hit is anything the Braves wouldn't worry about that. But that stuff is kind of second to me. Like second, it's on the back burner. My thing is this. If 29 other clubs said no, why would the Braves be the 30th? What is the problem? Because I think all that other stuff and the legal stuff, now that it's behind him, I don't think that's part of it. I don't think that's really anything, has anything to do with the fact that he hasn't signed with anybody. I don't know what the reason is, but he wasn't convicted. The lawsuits are gone. He's free reign. He is able to play, and that stuff is in his rearview mirror. So what is it? Is he a clubhouse cancer? I don't know. Is there a fear that he's lost something after, three seasons? Now, granted, he's playing in the Mexican League and played in Asia, but is there a fear? Maybe. So my answer is no. The Braves should not go get him. And from a baseball perspective, I think it's really simple as to why. It's two reasons. One, Fried's not going to be awful. He's not going to be what he was the last four innings on Saturday. He's not going to be like he was the first two innings of his first two starts. He's going to be good enough to match the stats on the back of his baseball card. I still think that's going to happen. But the bigger reason that I don't think that the Braves should go out and get Trevor Bauer is why? Why take a risk on a guy who hasn't pitched in the majors in several years when you do have Vines, you do have Smith Shawver, you do have Bryce Elder? And look, I know the obvious response for people who think that, you know, we should go out and get him is, yeah, none of those guys are aces. Well, of course they're not. None of those guys can are able to start in Major League Baseball. No, none of them are as one right this very second. But if you're the Braves, you have the luxury of, okay, hey, let's give Darius Vines a couple starts and let's send him down. Let's give Smith Shawver a couple starts and send him down and give Bryce Elder a couple starts. You have the ability, if you're the Braves, to create a rotation that is not dependent on one individual person to fill Strider's shoes. If you go out and get Trevor Bauer, then he's going to want to be the guy that steps in and is a starter. Whether it's a first, second, third, fourth, or fifth starter, he is a fifth starter. He is a starter. That's what he would get signed for. You don't necessarily need one individual to, I think, get the same kind of production. So no, the Braves don't need to go get Trevor Bauer. Again, all the legal stuff is behind him. I'm talking from a purely baseball perspective. Other teams? Yeah. The Yankees? Maybe. The Guardians? After what happened? Yeah. I mean, those teams don't have that luxury. The Braves do. And so if other things start compounding on top of the Strider injury, the vacancy, I should say, I guess now, and if Fried does struggle, then okay, maybe you start to reassess. But too much talent in the minors. What it does, however, if Fried does struggle, and just Strider's absence in general, Ronaldo Lopez is a guy that I don't think gets talked about in terms of pressure that has been now put on him, because he had a great start in the opener in Chicago, 5 2/3. But we talked to Justin Toscano on Friday, and we talked a little bit about the Braves' plan. Get him to 100, 115, 120 innings, and then, you know, maybe he goes back to the bullpen, which is why he was here to begin with. Okay, now that might change. That clock might change. That time frame might change. That window might change. So I think that's the biggest part of this, and it's one that nobody's talking about, is when all is said and done, the pitching staff's success or failure actually depends on what you can get out of Ronaldo Lopez, because that will directly impact how Brian Snitker operates with that vacant fifth spot now that Strider's gone. So we'll see if he can handle Ronaldo Lopez going to game two against the Mets. So it'll be interesting to see if he has a comparable performance. Speaking of the Mets, we'll talk to Zach Gelb with CBS Sports Radio, avid Mets fan, coming up in a little bit. However, before we get to him, I want to talk a little bit about dueling Major League Baseball statements, because we saw Strider go down. We know Bieber went down. A lot of other players went down as well. Yuri Perez is going to go under Tommy John surgery. You know, it is becoming a thing. It's becoming a thing. And there were dueling statements on Saturday night related to this, suggesting that the pitch clock might have something to do with what is sort of a rash of elbow injuries. And I'm not going to read them all verbatim, but essentially the players union says, despite player opposition and significant concerns, the commissioner's office reduced the length of the play clock last December, just 1 year removed from it being installed. And that has, what they're asserting, put pitchers at risk. The MLB fires right back and says that despite the John Hopkins report issued, that it found no evidence in pitchers who worked quickly were more likely to sustain an injury. So I have a couple thoughts on this. One, Major League Baseball is not changing it. Why? Money talks. It is that simple. Money talks. And if the game itself is more marketable with a pitch clock, with games going quicker, with innings being turned over quicker, it's not changing. You're not going to go backwards. That toothpaste is out of the tube. You can't put it back. And am I a doctor? No. Did I participate in this John Hopkins study? No. But I would get it. I mean, if that is true and pitching quicker leads to elbow injuries, okay, that just from a non-doctor standpoint kind of makes sense, right? But it's not changing. And unfortunately, that controversy is going to get wrapped around the Strider injury. But let's just call a spade a spade. It sucks that he has elbow issues. It sucks that a lot of players have elbow issues. The Players Association and the league can offer statement after statement after statement after statement. The second Major League Baseball issues the statement of anybody saying dollar bills, that's the actual truth. It's all about money, so it's absolutely not changing. We've got a great offer for Braves Report listeners. Listen and listen close, because this is the South's biggest deal. For a limited time, subscribe and you'll get digital access to the AJC for just $1.99 per week for life. That's right, $1.99 per week for life. That's as long, of course, as you keep your subscription. That includes our sports and politics coverage, breaking news, in-depth investigations, food, dining, and more from AJC.com every day for every day of your life. You'll unlock access to our app, exclusive films and events, newsletters, and more. Subscribe now by going to AJC.com/start. That's AJC.com/start. A great deal for Greater Atlanta. This is for new subscribers only. Join now by a guy who is one of my favorite people in the world. You know him from CBS Sports Radio, Zach Gelb, 3 to 6 on CBS Sports Radio. Zach, you and I have known each other for a very long time. We usually talk about football. We always talk about baseball at the end of our segments on CBS Sports Radio because you're a Mets guy and I'm a Braves guy. And now we get to talk about baseball for a full segment, not just one question. How are you, my friend?
Well, I'm doing great, and now I could just fully hate you, because usually during our college football conversations, I'm always like, I love Barrett for his college football takes, but I hate him for his baseball takes. Now, since you're all baseball, I could just hate Barrett Salee. So there's no more love-hate relationship, it's just all hate right now.
Well, that's generally how I have it at home, too. So, I mean, that's all good. Like, you know, that's normal. I know how to react to all of that stuff. But, Zach, you know, we always joke on this show. And I said it before last week. I was like, look, I'd rather the Mets be good for a little while and then tank instead of tanking early, because that takes the fun out of it. And I guess I jinxed them, because now they just won a series against Cincinnati. So as a guy who watches this team religiously, what happened before and how did things turn around over the last couple of days?
No, I understand they won a series, so now people are going to start to like buy back in. That's not me. I thought this team at best going into this season could win like 83 or 84 games, but my expectations were pretty low. The starting rotation has overachieved through these first 2 weeks. I think the starting rotation is not good. And these bats have been the big issue. Like, if this team is going to be above average, they're going to need their bats to show up. I know Lindor had some big hits today, but he's been dreadful to start the season. So hopefully this turns around so they could start to get a little jolt of energy from the offense.
You know, I think it's pretty easy in baseball or any sport to say, hey, your stars need to show up in big time situations. And Lindor did on Sunday, but Pete Alonso really hasn't all season long. Now, the funniest thing, which is a very Mets thing, but you know, I agree that it should be called more. Pete Alonso actually got hit in the elbow and was not awarded first base on Sunday because he stuck his elbow out, which is the right call. And it should happen a lot more places. But Pete Alonso, it might be just a microcosm of his entire season, because 10 strikeouts and 38 at bats, only 2 homers, 3 RBIs, batting .184 on the season. You know, they're going to need him, obviously. What's up with Pete Alonso for those Braves fans down here in Braves country that have not watched a ton of Mets baseball? What's up with Pete Alonso? What's going on?
I have no concern with Pete Alonso. You know, he's going to hit his 40 home runs that he usually does. But you go through these slumps where he does strike out a lot, because now we're in this era with big power hitters. It's either hit a home run or strike out. I do wonder how much of the offseason maybe did wear on him a little bit. And I don't want to use that as an excuse, but the expectation was from us Mets fans that he was going to get a contract extension, especially with our new owner and how much money he likes to spend. But they have not given him that contract extension yet. And that's something to monitor, because the Mets fan, we are conflicted, where we have a new owner that most of us do like in Steve Cohen, even though the honeymoon is starting to die down a little bit. But there's still a lot of us that are haunted by the old regime with the Wilpons that just have this fear that if this team is out of it at the deadline, they don't have the contract done with Pete Alonso, that they'll trade him. I don't think they will trade him. I think ultimately Steve Cohen will get the deal done. But I wonder how much of that mentally did wear on Alonso. But I think most of this is just the typical power hitter slump to start out a season.
Yeah, and you know, looking at what the Mets have done, you know, we always joke. I joke with you all the time and you joke with me all the time that, like, you know, it's easy to make the Mets jokes, right? But when you have Alonso hitting whatever it was below the Mendoza line, you have Francisco Lindor. He's not even over 100 yet. I think he's at 0.8. I think he's at batting 83 at this point. I think that's the Barrett Salee line, batting under 100. Although he did,
I think you're
well.
Too generous to yourself there. That's There's right. no way you ever point to 0.083.
I could bunt a couple of times. I could get a bunt for a hit every ten at bats or something. But I mean, you look up and down this line. It's Alonso struggling, Lindor struggling, Brandon Nimmo's barely batting over 100, Jeff McNeil's barely batting over 100. Like, this is not going to continue. You know, I think the law of averages, and I hate the saying, but you are what the back of the baseball card says you are. So these guys are not going to stay down forever.
But you know what will happen, Barrett? I guarantee you this, and I've seen this team enough. The starting rotation is overachieved through the first 2 weeks. So against the Braves, this is what will happen. The bats will come alive, and they'll lose these games 8-7 because the starting pitching will get lit up like a Christmas tree. I guarantee you they will never be on the same page.
Don't slight the Braves like that. 8-7, Julio Teheran's on the mound. We joked in the press box on Sunday.
Opening day legend for you guys.
Yes, that is true. I mean, he might give up 715 home runs on the anniversary of Hank Aaron's 715th home run. That's how he rolls. But no, I mean, if the Mets do put it together, right? Like, the slow start's the slow start. I get it. But if the bats come alive a little bit and you start to get a couple of these guys, you know, actually doing what they're supposed to do, or as their careers have typically suggested that they do, is this a wild card team? Could you see them at the very least? Because it's not like it's hard to get to a wild card, especially in an East division that, I mean, it's not like the Phillies are, you know, wearing people out either. Can you see them perhaps getting to that point, or are you already throwing in the towel here?
I'm very negative on this team. I think this is a punt season. So if you tell me they could win 83, 84 games and it works out where they're a third wild card team, I guess. If they're in it at the deadline, I do have confidence that Steve Cohen will allow our new general manager, David Stearns, or president of baseball operations, David Stearns, to go for it. But I think this is kind of new guy coming in, get the lay of the land after how much they did spend a year ago, and then really go for it a year from now. So if you want to tell me that this team could be a third wild card team, I'd rather take that than not. But I don't have any really big expectation for this team going in. I'm not one of those Met fan that's a sucker, all right? There's a lot of fans that will always be positive and will try to talk things up each and every year. That is not me. Now, I'm not always negative, but I think I'm fair. I think I'm balanced. And I just had no reason to get sucked into this team this year.
You know, when I was working at Bleacher Report, our offices were in New York, and every time I'd go up there, it was all Mets fans. It wasn't Yankees fans. For whatever reason, it was all Mets fans. And they gave me relentless hell about the Braves. And I just kept, like, I patted them on the head and sent them on their merry way, like, oh, y'all are cute.
I actually think you guys will go to the World Series this year. I think you guys are going to the World Series this year against the Orioles. Now, I think the Orioles are going to win the World Series over the Braves, but here's another guarantee. Max Fried with his 18 ERA, he'll go two hits against the Mets this week, and we'll give you seven sensational innings, and then people will get back on Max Fried with you guys.
I'm surprised it's that low, because after the first inning on Saturday, I mean, it was going to be, what, 58 or 68, and then somehow he got through five after giving up six in the first. So, I hope, Braves country hopes, that he did figure things out on Saturday. But on Monday night's game, it is the 50th anniversary of Hank Aaron's 715. Julio Teheran is on the mound for the Mets. And look, it's an emergency. I get it. You know, he's not the all-star that he used to be. But realistically speaking, what are the Mets expecting from our old friend Julio Teheran? And not just on Monday, but just moving forward for the next couple of months.
Hopefully a good redemption start up against the Braves. Like, Siri, this rotation, it's amazing how they were number one through the first 2 weeks of the season. Because this rotation on paper without Kodai Senga, and he's dealing with the shoulder injury, and we'll see whenever he could get back. But outside of Kodai Senga, like, he had Quintana starting on opening day. He was an opening day starter for the New York Mets. And I know that this rotation has held up so far, but I'm just waiting and waiting and waiting for them to break, because on paper, this is just a terrible rotation.
Yeah, it is. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It really does not look
good.
Can
I find one thing for you to say positive about the Mets in this conversation? Because I don't ever think I've seen Barrett Salee give a positive remark about the New York Mets.
All right, I'll do two things. One, I like you. You're my friend. and two.
That's City not Field positive.
Very, very nice. Okay. That's true. Okay. I'll do two others then. City Field is gorgeous. I love City Field. It's an awesome place.
Way little bougie though on the ballpark food though. The ballpark food there, it's too luxurious now. It's like, can we just go to a stadium and get a hot dog? Now we have a rainbow cookie egg roll that they serve there. I've never seen anything like
that. Wait a minute. Whoa. A rainbow cookie egg. I need more information on this.
So it has the shell of an egg roll, and then the inside is the rainbow cookie. That is one of the new food items at Citi Field. I have not gone to Citi Field yet this year because I'm just coming off all the March Madness stuff and I'm getting ready for the draft. I'll make my way out to Citi Field when the weather gets a little bit nicer, especially when the team stinks. You know, I'm not dying to go to Citi Field with this crappy weather that we have in New York. But a friend of mine said that the rainbow cookie egg roll, it was actually better than what he thought it was, and it was pretty damn good.
I could get on board with that. It actually does not sound terrible. Like, there's a lot. You mentioned bougie ballpark food. There's a lot of it. I mean, look, we get it down here, too, at Truist Park. It has gone that direction. But, I mean, that does kind of sound appetizing.
Yeah, they also do have a Pat LaFrieda filet mignon cheesesteak. Now, you wouldn't usually think a cheesesteak would be served in New York. But as someone that also lived in Philadelphia, attending Temple and then living in the area for 3 years after I graduated college, it is on par for a phenomenal cheesesteak in the New York ballpark.
New York has good food. That's another thing I can compliment New York about. No, my other compliment is that I actually respect Pete Alonso, even if he's yelling at Bryce Elder, you know, in the middle of a game, and then that Mets team blows that game in tragic fashion. Yeah, no, I like Pete Alonso. Like, I think that, you know, yeah, he's arrogant, but that's good. I'm totally fine with that.
We like personalities.
You can back it up. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. And so
you don't want Freddie Freeman, who like just never said anything or was never like really fun outside of on the field.
This is a no Freddie Freeman slander show.
Is he still crying about the Braves not getting the contract done with him now since he's in one of those creme de la creme team with the Dodgers? That gone away?
I think that he is perfectly happy with where he is, but he would have been perfectly happy here, too.
Sources tell me he was placing the bets for Ohtani. That's what I was told, too.
Oh, conspiracy theory here on the Braves Report.
And by the way, the Met fan, let me give you a little insight on the Met fan, because you'll like this. We have soured on Jeff McNeil. I know some supported with the opening day antics, with the Rhys Hoskins slide, but there's a good contingent of Met fans, me being one of them, that's like, Jeff McNeil, not as good as what he actually thinks he is. And he's been terrible to start this year.
That's surprising, because I thought that Mets fans, like the Rhys Hoskins thing, you know, to me, that felt like it would galvanize the Mets fans around him. Even if he hasn't, you know, been what he's been 115 right now. Okay, maybe that does explain it. But to me, he feels like a guy that Mets fans could rally around. So that does surprise me.
There was also a thing a few years ago between him and Lindor where they hit it behind this terrible debate about seeing like a rat or a raccoon in the clubhouse or something like that before a game. They got into a fight. There's no doubt about it. Lindor, McNeil, and Lindor is going to win that because he's one of the stars of the team. But McNeil, he's someone, you know, try hard guy, won the batting title. Everyone loved him at a time, but I think there's an expiration date where he's not as good as the way that he played in years past. And also, I don't think the Hoskins slot, like there have been dirty slides, like Chase Utley in the playoffs with the Dodgers. That was we could both agree, right, with Utley's background being a Philly guy, you being a Brave guy, me being a Met guy. That was a dirty slide on Ruben Tejada. I had no issue with Rhys Hoskins taking out McNeil. I think sometimes, and you see this in football too, that there's things now where there's a heightened awareness where we call them dirty where they're not. I had no problem with Hoskins.
I didn't either. But when he gave the tears gesture, I was like, okay, this is, you know, you're just asking for it now, which I mean, fine. I like drama, but.
Well, he ran away. I like Rhys, but he ran away. Like, if you're going to do the tear gesture, you can't be running away that quickly. Let's not have this be the NBA where it's the hold me back kind of fighting. Let's actually throw some fisticuffs here, okay?
Right. If you're going to do it, do it. Do it the right way. All right, last thing. Four-game series. You know what the matchups are. Charlie Morton on the mound for the Braves on Monday, and he will be facing our old friend Julio Teheran. The Braves do have a hole to fill with Strider's spot in a couple days, but what do you expect? What is best case, worst case for your Mets against the Braves?
Best case, they take 2 out of 4 here. I think a split would be, I would sign 2-2 up against the Braves, and I would be elated. The worst case is they get swept here. I think this will probably go, the Braves take 3 out of 4, is because I know the pitching is hot right now, but once again, I think this rotation is just a bad rotation, and they've been hot, so maybe they could carry that momentum and the bats get going, but I'm kind of expecting the Braves take 3 out of 4 here.
Yeah, the Braves bats can make good rotations look bad even at any point in the season.
What are you expecting?
3 or 4.
Okay, I don't know. So we're in the same line of thinking.
Yeah, with the hole for Strider, I mean, I'm not going to... It's almost impossible to say sweep because of that. I mean, it's hard to say sweep in regardless, but with that gap sort of there, I mean, 3 or 4 would be just fine, I think, for me and a lot of other people in Braves country.
Now, the Brave fan usually isn't that negative compared to, like, us Met fan, you know?
It's true.
I'm just wondering, with this, like, if this was a Met injury, I would be thinking done for the year, never coming back. Are people optimistic that he'll come back at some point? Or are they feeling like this is going to, it's eventually, they're just kicking this down the road of the inevitable that he's going to be out for the season?
I mean, I think the general consensus is out for the season. You know, okay. Going to get a second opinion, fine. You know, if you can get a second opinion, like that's true for both of us too. If you can get a second medical opinion, go do it, right?
Yeah.
That's fine. But I think everyone here is sort of, you know, understanding that this is done. And like, honestly, in that press room with Snitker on Friday, I mean, you could kind of tell that he already knew that Strider was done. So I would be surprised if it's not. I mean, it would be shocking at this point, honestly, but it'll be a fun series.
The difference between you and I actually feel bad for you with the injury. If this was a Met injury, I feel like Barrett Sully would be tweeting, LOL,
that's
Mets,
true,
here
Zach.
We go again.
That's not true. Maybe.
Maybe. Definitely. I'm not kidding. I've never had a reason to really hate the Brave fan. I know the Braves have always been great and always, but I just don't really know many Braves fans. Your Twitter feed... if I have a few drinks, let's just say on like a Wednesday or a Thursday night, and I'm seeing you troll the Mets, you get me very annoyed. I get triggered very easily just from your tweets.
But that's my job.
I feel like you root more against the Mets than you do for your Braves.
At the same time, it's fun to look. The Mets are the easy target, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to take the easy target. It's you raise your batting average that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
You hit, yeah.
Eventually one day Steve Cohen. I'm still in on Steve Cohen, but eventually one day Steve Cohen's gonna win a World Series in New York, and it's gonna be glorious because I'm gonna personally invite you, because I live right in New York City, right close to the Canyon of Heroes. I will personally invite you to the parade, and you can be my guest. It's gonna be awesome.
I if it's free, it's for me. If it's a free trip, I'm in. I don't care what
you may be 85, though, when this happens, if we're being serious.
Might have to leave the nursing home to get there. Zach.
I'll send you a walker.
There you go. Appreciate it. Let everybody know how they can listen to your show.
Sure. Monday through Friday, the Zach Yelp Show on CBS Sports Radio, local affiliate. Just check your listing, Sirius XM 158, the free Odyssey app, or you can watch us on YouTube, youtube.com/CBS Sports Radio, and social media, Instagram, Twitter, Zach Yelp, ZACHGELB.
Thanks, Zach. Appreciate it. Let's have a good series.
I would say good luck, but I wouldn't really mean it. But thanks for having me.
Don't think we need it either. That'll just about wrap it up for this edition of the Braves Report from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Appreciate you listening. Appreciate Zach Gelb from CBS Sports Radio popping on. Let's celebrate Hank Aaron's 50th anniversary of 715 in style. Let's get a win over the Mets. And hey, you know what? How about a sweep? Another sweep would be nice. Everybody's doing it. Let's see if we can do it again. Enjoy your week, Braves country.
When you're looking for leading cardiac treatment, look to Northside Hospital Heart Institute. We lead with 5 emergency cardiac care centers, so we're here when you need us most. We lead with more than 55 locations in Georgia. That means we're always in the heart of your neighborhood. We lead with clarity, because clear direction is better when it comes to understanding every step of your treatment. Northside Hospital Heart Institute. We lead with heart.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.